The views of this program are not necessarily the views of KJLL Radio, its management, or its sponsors. The host is solely responsible for its content. Enjoy.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure.
Direct from the golf course and onto your radio, this is...
Hello, everybody.
The Fred and Jeff Show.
And good afternoon, everybody. This is... Am I on?
You're on, baby. You're on. Now you're on louder.
All right. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. I can't hear myself very well, and that's because my volume is turned all the way down.
Way to go, Fred.
All right.
All that time to get ready.
That's right. So this is the Fred and Jeff Show, and welcome to it. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my brother, Jeff Arias.
How are you doing, Tucson, Arizona?
This is a beautiful, you know.
It was hot.
Yeah, it was a beautiful day.
It was a beautiful day.
It was hot. This is my favorite time of year.
Darn it, my air conditioning isn't working very good.
Yeah, I noticed that on the way over here.
I got to get some Freon in that
thing. This is, you know, I love Tucson, and I love the heat, and I don't know what it is about the summer, but I look forward to it every single year.
Well, it's okay.
I think maybe my brain cells were cooked back when we used to go swimming every summer, but I don't know.
Those were the days before sunscreen, weren't they?
They were the days before sunscreen.
Man, it's just getting fried out there. So welcome to the Fred and Jeff Show, and we've got a good show for you today.
Oh, this is
folks.
Exciting. We've actually been looking forward to this. Yeah,
this will be a good one for y'all. But what we want to do first is thank our sponsors. These are the folks that make the Fred and Jeff Show possible. So please support them, and they start out with Barker Morrissey Contractors, Casa de la Luz Hospice, H&S Estate Gardening, Mayfield Florist, The Monkey Burger, delicious. We had lunch there again today. It was great. Thanks, Roy. The Tinderbox, Big Mike. You'll be hearing from him in a little bit. And your friends at Ronstadt Insurance.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Those guys.
Now, it's interesting. You know, things happen.
What's interesting, Fred?
For reasons. I mean,
yeah.
Today we're going to be talking about astronomy and a lot of stuff having to do with that.
Right.
And across your desk this afternoon came this notice that space vehicle is going to be, it's making a trek across the country from California to Florida.
Right. Let me tell you how that started. So I got a buddy, his name is Jason Hartenbach, and he's the catering guy out at the Pima Air and Space Museum. The name of his place is called Flight. And we were just chatting this weekend. We were out with the wives, and we're just saying, Jason, we'd love to do a show at Pima Air and Space Museum because it's just a fabulous facility, and a lot of folks, you know, need to know about it. And help me set up a program out there. And Jason's like, yeah, great, no problem. So yesterday he emailed me. He said, okay, we'd love to have the Fred and Jeff Show at the Pima Air and Space Museum, but you got to know about something early. And here's the weird thing. Is they apparently were hamstrung a little bit because they had no time to get this notice out to everybody in Tucson. But that's a segue to you, Fred.
But tomorrow afternoon, they're thinking sometime after 2 o'clock, they're going to have the brand new
NASA's multi-purpose.
The brand new space capsule.
Yeah, it's the multi-purpose crew module flight test vehicle is making its only Arizona stop in Tucson on its way to the Kennedy Space Center.
That's right. And it looks like the old Apollo capsule. It's much bigger, you know, more technology. But it's going to be totally cool to see that thing in person.
That's great. And so you can, you know, go out to Pima Air and Space Museum and check it out.
Yeah, it's out on Valencia and Houghton. You can go out to the Pima Air and Space Museum. What do you want?
Let me give you the rest of that stuff because there's some more information
here.
Yeah,
and it's going to be there sometime after 2 o'clock tomorrow. They'll have it there all day Thursday, and then it's back on the road on its way to Florida.
Well, yeah, it's going to the Kennedy Space Center, but it is outstanding. So for more information, give the folks at Pima Air and Space Museum a call, and we will try to link this on the Fred and Jeff Show.
Oh, we'll definitely link it.
Website, so folks can click it and find out, or you can just go to the Pima Air and Space Museum website and check it out too, because it'll be in the Flight Central Hangar.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun opportunity and maybe one of those once in a lifetime kind of deals, because this is, I think it's more than a prototype. This is the capsule that was chosen. And they're bringing it send it over to Florida to play with it.
And it's only going to be in display to the public on Thursday.
Well, they said
sometime after
2 o'clock tomorrow,
and then it's gone.
And all day Thursday, it's gone.
That's crazy. So, you know, this is kind of paramount to the first time. Remember when we saw the space shuttle fly over and land in
Tucson?
Well,
yeah, the Enterprise, the prototype space shuttle, the Enterprise would come in and its docking vehicle, or, you know, the
piggy bank. It was, they were piggybacked.
It was piggybacked on a big Boeing, what is it, 790, 107?
I don't know. No, it was a big plane.
Yeah, but they would come down and land in at DM and refuel and take off.
Yeah, so something cool like that. So, folks, check it out. If you have the opportunity, go and check it out because it's something great, and it's happening, bing, bang, boom, and it's gone. So, anyhow, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back with our guest for today, George Coyne. And so stick around because we'll be back in about 2 minutes. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space.
At Barker Morrissey Contracting, our goal is to develop lasting relationships with each one of our clients. We measure our success on achieving that in the end. We offer the best possible combination of experience, integrity, and commitment available in Arizona. The foundation of our organization is a commitment to meet our clients' needs from pre-construction services through project build and move-in. We have experienced, cohesive project managers who thoroughly analyze each project prior to construction. We do this to provide value engineering at the front end of the project while reducing time-consuming change orders during construction. We are confident that our collaboration with you will result in a successful project that'll exceed your expectations. Barker Morrissey Contracting. Straightforward, honest, and reliable. Call us at 323-3831 to set up an appointment. That's 323-3831.
Casa de la Luz is Spanish for House of Light. That's what one needs when facing a terminal illness. A House of Light to provide comfort, support, and experienced hospice care during the end-of-life journey. The mission of Casa de la Luz is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Founded in 1998 by Lynette Jaramillo and Agnes Poor, Casa de la Luz Hospice has become a leading provider of superior hospice care throughout southern Arizona. Whether it is in the hospital, at home, an assisted center, or a nursing home, the caring staff at Casa de la Luz will reach far beyond the usual and customary hospice service. Every service provided is a reflection of our commitment to our community. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
Charlie's Comic Books, Tucson's Mightiest, is at a new location, the southwest corner of Speedway and Craycroft. Open 7 days a week, Charlie's is a full-service comic shop. New comics, back issues, all your collecting supplies, action figures, t-shirts, and more. No subscription too small, shipping available. Call 320-0279. That's 320-0279. Or click on charliescomics.com. Charlie's Comic Books, Tucson's Mightiest.
Viejo barrio, barrio viejo. En mi infancia te gocé.
And welcome back. This is the Fred and Jeff Show.
Yes, it is.
I am Fred Ronstadt, and I'm joined by my brother Jeff, and we invite you to join us on our electronic companion, which is fredandjeff.com, where this show and all of our other shows are posted, all sorts of fun information. And there's going to be a lot of information in this show today that you need to go to the website and check out.
Yeah, you'll really enjoy it.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Now,
drum roll, please.
No, I'm gonna let you do this because I know that you've been biting at the chomp.
Biting at the chomp. All right, so folks, our guest today is the retired director of the Vatican Observatory and a longtime family friend. Goes back to our grandfather, our dad. I had him as a professor at the U of A in astronomy. I'm still upset about that B you gave me. But our guest today is Father George Coyne. How you doing, Father Coyne?
Nice to meet you all again. It really is. My favorite altar boys from way back when.
Saints Peter and Paul.
And Jeff, that B, I pushed you up, actually.
Very nice. Very nice. So you have got a great, great history of all of your accomplishments that you've done. I mean, it's just, it's amazing what you have been able to.
Yeah, they're all just little white lies. Just little ones.
Well, that's okay. That's okay. So the first thing we want to talk about is where are you from, Father Coyne?
I'm from Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay. And what brought you to Arizona?
I came to Arizona. I was 2 weeks ordained a priest. I had done my PhD in astronomy back in Georgetown University, And University of Arizona invited me out for a summer research program because I had done my thesis on the chemistry of the lunar surface. And this is way back when. This is before the Ranger program, the Apollo program.
And 1966, right?
Yeah. And the University of Arizona was just building up. Not 1866. I may look like it was 18. Hey, Fred, I may look that old, but I really am not.
No, I thought he said 1866.
Fred has these lapses. So
yeah, but what was happening? You've heard of the Kuiper Science Building at the University of Arizona.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Gerard Kuiper was brought here from the University of Chicago to begin this big program in planetary research, and especially lunar research at that time. They were selecting the places. The University of Arizona built a telescope in the Catalina Mountains specifically to have very high-resolution mapping of the moon to select the best sites for the lunar landing.
Really?
And I was invited out to be part of this, you know, very major program. It was a small part of it.
So as a young man getting your PhD and no one had been to the moon yet, how did you possibly come up with what the moon surface could consist of?
Well, you know, we were doing very remote observing at that time. Now we've picked up pieces of
sure.
the moon. But I take a little umbrage at your notion of young man. I mean, there is no way, even in 1966. Do you know a Jesuit priest? When I was ordained, the Cardinal Archbishop said, a Jesuit ordination is a reward for a life well spent. We're already old when we were ordained.
So that's funny. So when they picked up the material off the moon, how close were you with your thesis?
We were fairly close. I mean, we were really very fairly close. But, you know, when you're doing remote observing, it's very difficult. It's very much different than picking up pieces of
sure.
the moon. But it was a fascinating program here. I was here for a summer research program. And then they thought that it was so fascinating what I was doing, they invited me back for a two-year kind of research fellowship. And then I became a faculty member. And then later on, I became acting director at the University of Arizona. It was a challenging time. It really was.
Now, why do you say that?
Well, because the University of Arizona was just beginning in those days to become one of the major research centers for astronomy in the world. And the reason was there were a convergence of circumstances. The National Observatory was selected to be built on Kitt Peak.
Okay.
And that was in the mid to late 1960s. With that, a big resurgence started. The University of Arizona built up its astronomy department, built up its planetary sciences department. And today, I don't know how many people who are natives or live in Tucson realize that this is the capital of observational astronomy in the world. Observational astronomy. That is, using sophisticated instruments and telescopes to study the heavens.
And now, what makes Tucson such a perfect place to do that?
Where would you build, you know, have a big astronomical center? You need a piece of the Earth that's very homogeneous. It's all dirt, it's all grass, it's all trees, etc. You don't want any people, but you need a city because you have to support, you know, with the university, the electronics industry and all of that.
Sure.
And you want high mountains to get above the precipitation in the Earth's atmosphere. So the Southwest United States is ideal for this, as is Mauna Kea in Hawaii, as is Northern Chile. In fact, we have telescopes in Tucson, Arizona, in the environs here, that are twinned with telescopes in northern Chile for the very reason that the Atacama Desert, that 200 miles north of Santiago in Chile, is very similar to our Sonoran Desert. But the point is, this is one of the capitals of observational astronomy. When I taught at the University of Arizona, I tell my students that, and they were absolutely amazed at this fact.
Well, I think anyone that hears that fact would be amazed.
Yeah. I mean, I tell them that there is very few places in the world where you have as many, let's call it PhDs in astronomy per capita population as you do in Tucson. That is, the density of astronomers is very high in Tucson. I also tell them many of the astronomers, including myself, may be very dense, but that's not the point.
That's funny.
Well, I've growing up with you and my grandfather, I mean, my grandfather was, you know, into astronomy, and being at family dinners at the old house on Helen Street, you know, and you would be there and you'd be telling stories about things going on. And that was right before you actually went to Rome. You know, a lot of the stuff that we were involved in. We sort of grew up having a sense that Tucson was a special place when it came to astronomy. And, you know, we've had fights with Mount Graham, with the squirrels, and I mean, all sorts of things that go on over time that you sort of get a sense that, you know, there's telescopes around. But how many telescopes are there actually in the area? I mean, there are a lot.
Fred, I'd find it very hard to count, but let me give a good guess. There are about 20 telescopes on Kitt Peak. There are 4 or 5 telescopes in the Catalina Mountains, both Mount Lemmon and Mount Bigelow. Now, those telescopes, of course, are much too close to Tucson now, okay, but they can still do some important work.
Now, they're too close and to Tucson because of all the lights?
That's correct. Okay. Yeah. You know, Tucson, when we started Kitt Peak, you know, and the Bigelow and Mount Lemmon observatories and Kitt Peak and all the others, Tucson was a city, this is in the mid-1960s, of about, I'm guessing, of about 150,000 people. And it was predicted that by the year 2000, it would be 300,000 people. Well, they were only off by a factor of 4.
Yeah, not bad at all. Not bad at all.
So what we've done, of course, is develop Mount Graham, which is one of the best sites in the it is the best site in the continental United States for astronomy, because it's a mountain that is almost 11,000 feet high. Safford, Thatcher, those little communities there are no more than, 30,000 people?
Yeah, total. Not many people.
Probably more cattle than people, you know? But the problem is, and it's a problem we continually have to face, okay, that we say Safford, Thatcher could not grow because there's not enough water there. Look what we've done to Phoenix.
Yeah. There's no water.
Phoenix was smaller than Tucson when we started some of this operation. You know, now it's a city of coming on 4 million.
Four million,
that's a lot.
So Mount Graham is a good observatory for now. But I think the point is we have to face the fact that a telescope typically has about a 40-year lifetime.
That's a long.
It's about half a human lifetime.
Okay, but it's probably a full career.
That's correct.
The folks that
and
are
then
working
we build it. Up the next generation of telescopes.
And doesn't technology change dramatically during that 40-year
period? Jeff,
there
are two reasons why a telescope has a limited lifetime. One is technology advances very rapidly, mm-hmm. okay? And the second is people move in. Civilization moves in. And those two factors determine this 40-year lifetime on the average for a telescope.
Now, do things like the Hubble telescope, does that become a substitute for land-based, or is it that an enhancement, or how does
Fred,
that
you bring up what is a very important issue, and it has to be faced. We need both space telescopes and big telescopes, big telescopes on the ground, and we need both. And the reason is the Earth's atmosphere does essentially two things that are not so good for astronomers, right? It filters out some of the information, like the far ultraviolet, some of the infrared, does not get through the Earth's atmosphere. So the only way to see it, to observe it, to get that information, is to go into space. But the Earth's atmosphere also perturbs radiation that comes through. That we have corrected, we've overcome. And this is technology on the move. We now have methods whereby a telescope on the Earth can sense this radiation coming through, sends a signal to a computer. The computer comes back and tells the mirror, turn this way, turn that way, move this way, move that way, and you will correct for the perturbations in the Earth's atmosphere. So we now have telescopes here in the environs of Tucson that are on the surface of the Earth, but can observe as accurately as space telescope because we can correct for these perturbations.
Now, I'm sorry, go ahead, Father.
Yeah, no, that's, and the other factor is economic.
Well,
it costs about 500 times more to collect a bundle of energy in space. Depends on the wavelength, the color of the light, etc. But now 500 times more to collect a bundle of energy in space as it does on the Earth.
Okay, now wait a second.
Now, if I can go to the Circle K and buy a quart of milk, mm-hmm. you know, for a dollar, and there's a place across town that's selling it for, you know, 5 cents, even though gas costs a little bit to get across there, I'm going to go buy 5 cents rather than a dollar. And that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, confronting space with Earth-based observing.
Now, I've got a friend, and we hope to get some of these guys on the show in the future, that worked on the Phoenix Mars mission.
Oh, yeah.
And these guys were amazing.
Fabulous.
Amazing. Fabulous. And what these guys were talking about was that sooner than later, they're going to be building facilities on the moon, freestanding facilities on the moon that will either shoot payloads into Mars because you use up so much energy to break the Earth's atmosphere.
Gravity.
Thank you, Fred.
Well, way to go, Fred.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know some science.
And you didn't even get a B in my astronomy course.
He was too afraid to take it. So are they thinking about building maybe some telescopes on the moon? Or I mean, would that help the project? Or is it what the Hubble did where you shoot something out into the universe? Is that more of an economical thing?
It's hard to say. I'm not enough in the picture there, you know, budget-wise and technical-wise to know.
Since you started, have probably grown leaps and bounds.
Oh, it's absolutely amazing. The mirrors that we use in telescopes now, the University of Arizona Mirror Laboratory is the first and still only place in the world that makes these very, very thin, very large mirrors.
How large is large?
Eight meters and a little more across. So that's, 350 to 400 inches across. The Palomar telescope was 200 inches across.
Wow.
So these are, two to three times bigger.
And they're manufacturing those at the U of A.
Right. The Mirror Laboratory right under the stadium at the U of A.
Yeah.
Wow. By the tree ring,
guys. It's fabulous.
Wow, that's
I don't
amazing.
Know whether the tree ring guys.
Oh yeah, they are because we had them on a show a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're moving out. But.
Yeah, they are, but they've got a bunch of stuff down there. So, all right, well, we've got to take a break, unfortunately. And when we come back, one of the things we want to tease our audience with after the break is that you can give us a description of the universe by using the dimensions of a football field.
Yeah, or something like it.
Like that,
yeah. Right?
Okay, so we were told
a football. Football field is too small, so I'm gonna
I would think so.
Take something a little bigger to start with.
All right, so
but not much bigger.
Well, I think it's amazing that you could even take, you could even describe that in something, But then again, you teach college.
I worked it all out, and I'm going to give you an exam after it.
Oh no!
All right. So after the break, we're going to hear about the universe, a relative. History of the universe.
Yeah, and maybe some stuff about Castel Gandolfo with the Vatican Observatory.
Oh, yeah, we got a lot of stuff to cover.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
We're going to be back after the news at the bottom of the hour with Father George Coyne and some more fun.
Yeah, so stick around.
What time did John Nugidan? Oh, it was what ninch care. He aunt my sick, he up a more at you, Sean.
CNN Radio, I'm Stan Case. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has reinstated a new state law that triggered major protest earlier this year. It limits the collective bargaining rights of most state employees. Former Labor Secretary Robert Rice says the issue is a sign of the economic times.
The reality of the economic moment does give more force and effect and to some extent more legitimacy to governors who are seeking to break public sector unions.
The Wisconsin AFL-CIO blames partisan politics for the court's ruling. Supporters of California's law against same-sex marriage say they'll appeal the latest ruling in their ongoing legal battle. A federal judge rejected the argument that a judge who declared the law unconstitutional has a conflict of interest. Judge Von Walker is gay. Same-sex marriage is legal in 5 states, and New York could become number 6. Governor Andrew Cuomo announced his proposal Tuesday. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
The Home Depot is powering contractors with a powerful new paint, Kills Pro X. Specially created for professional jobs, it sprays easily and dries fast, so you'll save time applying it. And since you don't have to visit a specialty paint shop to pick it up, you'll save time and money buying it. It's the name you've trusted for years, now in paint made for pros. Kills Pro X, only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot.
Do you suffer from irrigation leaks, a broken sprinkler, leaky valves, or you just can't find the problem? At H&S Garden, we provide high-quality, reliable service at reasonable prices. Our repair technician has over 25 years of experience. And if you hate pulling weeds, raking mesquite beans, or trimming those thorny bushes, just leave the dirty work to us. We're licensed contractors with 30 years of experience in landscape management. Our crews are professional and take pride in their work. We'll meet you on site to establish a program that works for you. Call today at 293-6488 or visit us at hsgarden.com. H&S Garden, a family-owned and operated Tucson small business.
Hi, I'm John Fina from Performance Footwear, and a lot of people think that after I finished playing pro football, my health insurance would not be an issue. Not true. So when I needed a great health plan for me and my family, I called the folks at Ronstadt Insurance. They hooked us up with the perfect policy from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona, and we couldn't be happier. So if you're shopping for health insurance, give my friends at Ronstadt Insurance a call at 721-4848. They'll be happy to help you. Oh, and when my mom and dad turned 65, my friend Jim at Ronstadt Insurance helped them find the right Medicare plan. Call the pioneers in good service at Ronstadt Insurance, and they'll help you buy the right policy the first time.
Ronstadt Insurance is a full-service insurance agency. Give us a call at 721-4848 or look us up online at ronstadtinsurance.com. Ronstadt Insurance is an agent authorized to sell health insurance plans from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
May I light that cigar for you, sir?
Thank you.
And welcome back, Tucson. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my brother Jeff.
You blew my eardrums out there.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Same here.
Wow. And,
well, you know.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. And, well, speaking of blowing things out, it's time for the cigar of the week.
Hello, Big Mike.
Hello, guys. You guys okay?
Yes.
I'm doing great.
Winter's coming, Mike, and Fred has lost it.
Yeah, winter is coming, and Fred lost it a while ago.
Yeah, you know, you take a puff of cigar and you blow the smoke out.
Okay. So what do you got for us this week, Big Mike?
Hey, today we got a full-bodied smoke.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
Yes.
We were there today. It was like, I walked in, it was like, yes, this is one of my favorite cigars of all time.
Yeah, it's the Camacho Triple Maduro. And it's an interesting cigar. It's made in Honduras by Camacho, and the entire cigar, wrapper, binder, filler, all Maduro tobacco. But in the filler, there's an extra two different varieties of Maduro. So actually, when you're smoking the cigar, there's five different varieties of Maduro tobacco, all encased in this beautiful chocolate-colored, full-bodied wrapper.
Wow.
Oh, man, it's oily and rich and yummy.
Geez. And as most of our listeners know, I am not a full-bodied cigar guy, but Fred goes over the moon for those cigars. So
yes, Freddie and I like the full-bodied smokes. It's a delicious cigar.
Yeah, but you guys have plenty for us mild smokers, too, though, Mike, right?
Well, absolutely. We've got everything, mild, medium, flavored cigars. We've got everything in between.
There you go.
But this week, if anyone wants a full-bodied smoke, this is a ticket. This cigar, unfortunately, goes into back order periodically. It's hard to get cigars sometimes, but when they're running the production and they got them, and which we do, they're a great cigar to come in and try. And as usual, it's buy three, get one free.
And I highly recommend the Perfecto size.
Yeah, it's a great little smoke, especially if you've never had something this full body. Get that little Perfecto. It's a great little smoke.
It is. So Michael, if people want to get this deal, where do they go?
Easy deal. Find us at 5350 East Broadway Boulevard, Suite 124. And if they want, please give us a call at 747-4807.
Thank you, Michael. And on the other side of this break, we're going to be talking about the universe. And I got to tell you something. There's an application on
really? You're going to tell me something?
I'm going to tell you something. There's an application on the iPad called Pocket Universe where you can hold it up and watch all the stars.
Yeah. Yep.
And you know, there's Google applications too, and it is so nice sitting on the back patio, smoking a cigar, watching the stars.
But only in Tucson.
Only in Tucson.
We'll see you in a minute, folks.
Hearing guitars like someone in love. Sometimes the things I do astound me. Mostly whenever you're around me. Lately, I seem to...
This is Lamont Hundley from Arizona Health with your Fred and Jeff Show fitness tips. When it comes to your personal exercise routine, balance should be the most important ingredient. It's easy to lose track of time during a workout. Often we end up doing more strength training, then your cardio gets shortened, and there's no time to stretch. Balance is always the key to fitness success. You need an accurate portion of cardiovascular and respiratory improvement exercises, strength training, and always stretch before or after the workout. Just as a balanced diet is important in your nutrition, a balanced workout would help you achieve greater results. For more information, please contact Arizona Health at arizonahealth.com. This has been Lamont Huntley with your Fred and Jeff Fitness Tips.
What's a monkey burger?
A simple, well-made burger cooked to your choice.
Why monkey burger?
We called it that because come see our art on the walls. It tells a story. Monkey burger, where it's impossible to be a food snob, even if they do serve wine, beer, as well as Tucson's best burger. 514-9797.
Just drive right past Olive Garden on Broadway and Craycroft and park in front of Monkey Burger.
Thank you for calling Huge Conglomerate Insurance. Your call is somewhat important to us. Please hold, and we'll be with you as soon as we can.
When you get sick or injured, the first call you make is to your neighborhood doctor. Shouldn't the next call you make be to your local insurance representative? Skip the hours waiting on hold to ask a simple question about what your insurance policy will cover.
Your current wait time is 45 minutes.
Instead, call Ronstadt Insurance at 721-4848 and get the attention that you deserve. Trust local, trust Ronstadt Insurance. Pioneers in good service.
Visit the Fred and Jeff Show online at fredandjeff.com.
And welcome back, Tucson. This is the Fred and Jeff Show.
Kindler, gentler Fred. And welcome back, everybody, to the Fred and Jeff Show. Here we are,
this wonderful
Tuesday in June.
This dedication goes out
We've all melted enough because the air conditioning in Jeff's car is not working. So,
welcome back to the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my brother Jeff. And with us in studio is the vivacious and lovely Father George Coyne.
Fred is on a roll today. I don't know.
I'm glad this is not on TV.
Oh, we'll have pictures of you later, Father Coyne. So, Father Coyne, you are the retired... Fred moved my paper. He loves moving my papers away. You are the retired director of the Vatican Observatory.
Yeah, well, retired is, you know, a strange word for me. I've never done a day's work in my life. So what do you retire from?
You've enjoyed it that much.
That's right.
That's great. So earlier we were talking about
the Palomar Telescope.
The Palomar Telescope. You mentioned the Palomar Telescope.
Yeah, right.
And most folks out there probably don't know what the Palomar Telescope is. Can you tell us?
Well, the Palomar Telescope is still active, but, you know, it's very much reduced in its possibility to do much science. Because, first of all, it's right above Pasadena, and, you know, that area has grown up. But the Palomar was the world's big telescope in the 1940s, 1950s, okay? It's 200 inches across in diameter, okay? But the point is, it was the old-type telescope. Being 200 inches across, it was also about 24 to 30 inches thick, because they had to take a big piece of glass, scrape away at it, to get the curved surface to bring light to a focus. And you have to have a very accurate surface to bring that light to
a
focus.
How long did that take them to do that?
Took them 20 years. They had to scrape away about 20 tons of glass.
Well,
to overcome that, here at the University of Arizona, a unique development, okay, the Mirror Laboratory today is the, you know, is the result of a great idea of Roger Angel, professor at the University of Arizona, who said, let's do a different thing. Let's take solid glass, put it in a rotating furnace, a pizza pan, so to speak, but a big pizza pan, put solid glass in, melt it down, and start rotating this pan. Well, as you rotate a liquid, centrifugal force drives the liquid out, and it gives you exactly the surface you need for a telescope. You can have a steep surface, you can have a not-so-steep surface by controlling the rate of rotation of the pan and the temperature gradient at which you re-solidify the glass. In other words, you cool it down. You have to control those very accurately. You know, as you lower the temperature, as you increase, or I mean decrease the rate of rotation, you control that through a computer nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
So the association of computer technology with all of this glass technology has produced at the University of Arizona Mirror Laboratory, unique in the world's largest single telescope mirrors.
Wow.
So the largest is a little over 8 meters. That's 320 to 350 inches across.
And the interesting thing about it is it's not a solid piece of glass. It's on a there's a base to it.
There's a base to it.
It's made
there's
of a polymer, isn't it?
That's correct.
And so just the surface is the glass.
The surface is only, I guess a couple inches thick at the most. I don't know the quantitative details. So that you have much less glass to be disturbed by temperature changes and all of this. Another development that happened here was what we call the multi-mirror technology. That because even a mirror like this you can only make so large, because after a while it begins to sag as you move it around the sky, okay, due to gravity. So what the University of Arizona has developed is let's mount more than one mirror on the same mounting and through computers have them talk to one another so they act as if they were a single mirror. Now these two technologies together being build big thin mirrors, mount more than one on the same structure, has allowed the University of Arizona with partners around the world to build the world's largest optical telescope, which is located on Mount Graham.
Wow.
That has five lenses, right?
No.
Oh, five mirrors,
Jeff,
I mean.
This is the one. No, the one on Mount Hopkins, south of Tucson and the Santa Rita's, yeah, had six
okay,
two-meter mirrors. But the one in the Mount Graham now has two 8.4-meter mirrors, I think it is.
Yeah. That's huge.
So this technology developed here, you know, at the University of Arizona is one of the big breakthroughs in mirror technology. It's not the only. I mean, there are other competing technologies. But you have to realize, you know, let's give Tucson and the University of Arizona merit where merit is due.
Absolutely.
Both technologically and in scientific research, it has become one of the biggest centers in the world, no doubt about it.
Yeah, it's fun living in a place that has all this really cool stuff, and it's and you know you can go to some of these telescopes and there's public viewings and you can see all sorts of stuff, but it just the information that's been collected in our little community is just astounding.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Absolutely.
So we want to talk about the universe.
Oh my.
And
life, the universe, and everything. Well,
right, 42, right, Fred?
It's kind of big, you know.
Right, exactly.
How much of it do you want to talk about?
Well, let's help us.
We heard through the grapevine that you can describe the entire universe using a very small model.
Yeah, you're listening to your daddy. Fred.
He is.
He always gets me in trouble. Jim Monson.
So let's hear
no,
this.
No, we can, yeah. Here's an idea. Okay. The universe is 13.9 billion years old. So this means that as we look out, okay, in any direction, we're looking back 13.9 light years back. That's a distance.
And how do we know this?
We know this from measuring very distant objects.
Okay.
And we have a very good hold on it. But, you know, the diameter of the universe being that big, you know, so the diameter is 2 × 13.9 billion light years. So what I'm going to do is to make sense out of this. Let's make out the universe, this whole big, big universe, is the size of the city of Tucson.
Okay.
And what I mean by the city of Tucson, let's limit it to the Rincon Mountains, to the Tucson Mountains. Okay. That's the universe. Okay. Now I want to ask, in that universe, we on the Earth are in a planetary system around a star, the sun, that's one of 100 billion stars in our galaxy. And our galaxy is in a local group of galaxies, about 20 galaxies that form a family, like your family. Only you don't have 20 in your family, but I don't think.
a couple more than that.
And this local group, this family of 20, exists in what we call a supercluster of galaxies. Now, let's say, where are we in this whole sort of buildup of the universe? Well, the supercluster of galaxies, in this universe that measures the size of Tucson, this supercluster would be the size of the campus of the University of Arizona.
Wow.
Let's say from Campbell to Euclid. Okay, so you get the idea. Tucson is the universe. In that universe, we have this campus, which is a supercluster of galaxies. Now, within that supercluster of galaxies, we have this family, this local group of 20 galaxies. How big is it? On the campus, it's about the size of McHale Center. Okay? So, repeat. Universe is Tucson. The local supercluster is the campus of the university. And our local group of galaxies, of which we're one of 20 galaxies, is McHale Center. Okay. What is the size of our galaxy in this? Our galaxy is a very tall basketball player in McHale Center. You know, 7 foot tall. That's our galaxy.
So Derek Williams is our galaxy.
That's right. Within the city of Tucson, where we have this, et cetera, et cetera. Well,
right.
You're going to ask, you know, well, we haven't gotten yet to, you know, we're in our galaxy.
Right.
Where is our planetary system? Not just the Earth, but the whole, the sun, and all the planets out to Neptune and all, how does that fit in? Okay. Well, you take Derek, this 7 foot basketball player.
Right.
You pull a hair off the top of his head.
Sow.
You slice it so you have about 1/1000th the thickness of that, and that's our planetary system.
That's crazy.
Our system.
Yeah, yeah.
So the Earth, God knows where the Earth is and all this. But so let me repeat. You know, if you get an idea, it's just the bigness of the universe. Tucson, McHale Center.
U of A campus.
U of A campus, McHale Center, Derek, 7 foot tall. Take a hair and slice it, you know, to 1,000. And you have our planetary system.
Wow.
But, you know.
How can we possibly see beyond McHale, you know, using your analogy?
Well, these big telescopes. That's how we see.
And how far, using this model, how far have we seen?
We've seen 13.9. Well, we've seen, I'm sorry. We've seen about 12 to 13 billion light years out.
And so from Derek to, was it Swan?
Maybe not even. No. Derek to about Gates Pass.
Wow.
The edge.
Right.
You know, not quite at the Tucson Mountains yet.
And the other thing, the little, the other dimension that gives it an interest is that we're not seeing
all around us.
Well, no, we're not seeing the, you know, as far as out as we're seeing 13 billion light years away in our time. That was 13 billion years ago is what we're seeing.
You've brought up what is a very, very important, interesting point, Fred, that what we're seeing out there, we're seeing as it was 13 billion years ago.
So in 13
may not exist.
Yeah, in 13 billion years, whoever's here on this earth will see out there today. what happened today. You'll see 13 billion
years from now. Anybody that's still around in 13 billion years. But, you know, this is an interesting thing, though. You know, astronomers struggle to try and understand something that, you know, we don't touch. It's so far out there, but we can know a lot about it. So what we do is, you know, working on what Fred just said, if I look out 10 billion light years, I'm seeing something as it was 10 billion years ago. Okay? If I look out 200,000 light years, I'm seeing something as it was 200,000 years ago. So if I'm clever enough, I can build up how things aged in the universe by looking at different distances.
Very good.
Yeah. So I see the sun as it was 8 minutes ago.
Right.
Okay? I see the center of our galaxy as it was 30,000 years ago. I see the nearest galaxy to our own as it was, I think it's 2 million years ago. Okay, 200 million years ago. All right?
And
so we can build up how things aged in the galaxy by looking at different distances.
And what have you discovered by looking at all those distances?
Oh, it's fascinating. In fact, we're using the Vatican telescope on Mount Graham in combination with Hubble telescope to see how galaxies age. Because Hubble, as we were just discussing, sees galaxies as they were billions and billions of years ago. Our telescope, which is not very large, it's 2 meters compared to the big, big telescopes, but it has very high imaging quality, so it can look at nearby galaxies, which are, as we're talking, you know, from the idea we've been sharing, are old galaxies. So coupled with Hubble, we're looking at young galaxies, old galaxies, and seeing how do young galaxies become old. It's like going, you know, I walk around Tucson, and the only thing I see are these little creatures that are about 2 foot high. That's all I see. And then one day I see somebody as tall as you are, Jeff, and I say they look like they have arms, they have noses and stuff. Did this little creature become this big creature through growing up? And that's what we're doing with the universe.
Oh, that's great. So do you want to ask your Galileo question?
No.
Okay.
I was just going to be a smart aleck, and, you know, because it's always intrigued me that the Vatican, you know, the heart of the Roman Catholic faith, was embracing science and had a, like a house astronomer, and you know, engaged in research and science, when, you know, back in the day they were, you know, hanging Galileo from his toes for saying that the Earth revolved around the sun. But that's just that's just me being a
that's history.
No, I understand
things
history.
Happen in history, and some things happen in history contradict other things that happen in history.
But I think
we
it's wonderful.
We had a civil war.
Oh yeah,
you know, and yet we've tried to grow out of it. And
even if you go to the observatory website, which we'll have on our webpage, there's a really great article that you wrote that talks about 5 dissertations that were done by Pope John Paul II,
right.
Trying to marry discussions or you know, bring some kind of resolution or discussion about natural science and faith.
Yeah. You know, a thing behind this all, if you'll permit me.
Sure.
You know, we talk about bigness. You know how big the universe is. You know, you have to reduce it to the size of Tucson to get some understanding where Derek is and where the center of our galaxy is. We talk about long times, you know, billions and billions of years, you know. The important thing is not to be overwhelmed by all these big numbers, these big sizes and big times and all, but to realize what a lot of scientists don't realize. An amazing thing has happened on this little grain of sand that we call the Earth.
Right.
I mean, it's one of 8 planets around one star of 100 billion stars in our galaxy, of 100 billion galaxies in the universe. But on this little grain of sand, we developed the possibility of reflecting on the universe,
right.
Of putting the universe in our heads.
Right.
So the universe is no longer kind of in blind evolution. In us, the universe is thinking about itself, which is an amazing achievement. That's what we're doing now.
Right. That's right.
And
that's
we don't reflect
thing.
Upon it enough. You know, It's amazing that we have, through modern science, the ability to do what we do. I mean, I'm telling you, the universe is 13.9 billion plus or minus 200 million years old. And I know that.
That's amazing.
From all the data we collect from right. various independent sources. That's an amazing achievement. And so, you know, once we reflect, you know, upon ourselves in this universe, then we come up with all kinds of challenging questions.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt about it. Why are we here? Why?
Yeah, it's, well, yeah. One of the things, one of the reasons that we're here is because we've got great sponsors like the Coleman brothers who give us... You like that segue, Fred?
I love it.
So who give us good stuff to give to our listeners. And so we've got a dozen roses for the first caller who can tell us what was originally the largest telescope in the United States. What was the name of the largest telescope in the United States? We talked about it a little while ago. So the first caller at 529-3508 gets a dozen roses from the Coleman brothers just in time for Father's Day. Give us a call. And we're here, right here at the end of our interview, we're here with Father George Coyne, retired Vatican Observatory Director. And Father Coyne, you're amazing. We could talk to you for days because we've barely scratched the surface of, you know, just all the questions we have.
Ah, good, Jeff. Good. Do I qualify for Father's Day?
You absolutely. Yes, you do.
If you can answer the question before the caller who's on the line right now. Now, there is something that Dad wanted us to bring up, and that's the binocular telescope.
Right.
And we have a couple of minutes, you know, left in the show. You want to talk about that? Because it sounds
sure.
It's really cool.
Yeah, I've talked about it a little bit.
Yeah.
Are we on now?
Yeah, we're on.
I thought that I could dance out the door or something.
No,
like that.
No, no. We got a couple of minutes.
The binocular telescope on Mount Graham is what I was talking about. It's called binocular because it has these two, I think it's 8.2, but it's a little over 8-meter mirror, so it's about 320 to 350 inches. There are two of them on the same mounting, so it's called binocular.
Got it.
Okay. And it's the largest optical telescope in the world.
That's great. And when was it finished?
Oh, my gosh. The exact date, I don't know. But it's within the past few years that it's become fully operational.
And you think it's got a 40-year lifespan?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sure. Now, is there? Well, I know 40 years is a long time.
That's from what we know from past history. You know,
is there any work going out there looking for the
generation?
Next site? Yeah, looking for the next site of what might do a better job than the binocular.
Oh, yeah, we're moving forward all the time. Yeah, yeah.
Still
at
in
the
Arizona.
University of Arizona, they're exploring different technologies to build even bigger telescopes. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Wow! Wow! Wow!
Where the sites will be, you know, Mount Graham is, you know, it's limited possibilities there. But we have from the government, we have permission to build 7 telescopes. There are 3 now. There's the large binocular we're just talking about.
Right.
There's the Vatican Advanced Technology Telescope, which is the Vatican and there's the SMT, which is a radio telescope.
Wow, that's great. Well, Father Coyne, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Good
really
to be
appreciate
with you,
it.
Jeff.
Yeah, really okay. appreciate it. And you know, we say to our guests when they ask us, well, why do you want us to be on the show? Because we talk about all the positive things that happen in Tucson and Southern Arizona. And you are at the forefront of that. You're a great man, a great teacher, a great scientist, and we appreciate your time.
Thanks, Jeff, and thanks for bringing your big brother along.
You're welcome. I can't go anywhere without him now. So, Tucson, have a great week. We'll see you next week.
We'll be talking Bobcats next week.
Bobcat, yeah, absolutely. So have a great week, Tucson, and stay cool.
Pasando días con el nacimiento, aquí te espero, porque te quiero, porque te adoro, eres mi tesoro.
KJLL, South Tucson. CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. The FBI wants surveillance tapes of a chance meeting between Lance Armstrong and the former teammate who says he cheated. It happened at a Colorado restaurant. The two had words.